Welcome back to Executive Sessions. I'm your host, Clayton Gollett, and I'm joined by two wonderful people here today. To my right is Sir John Stewart, a former co-star here on the first episode. You were here in the beginning, weren't you, John?
Yes.
He was here in the beginning with us. You know his background. And to my left is Tyler May. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, this is our third episode. You know, it's a big one. You know, everybody says three's a charm. We're going to rock and roll today. But before we dive in, it's always customary for whoever's new to kind of give us an introduction about themselves. You know, tell us about their history, how they got started, and how they're connected to John. So,
yeah,
take it away.
Well, happy to start with my background. So my name is Tyler May. I'm a VP on the investment team based out of Lexington. And, you know, I joined the team in 2018. I was actually born and raised in Lexington, Kentucky, went to the University of Kentucky, got my start in undergrad, spent a summer in Charlotte with Wells Fargo, interned in their investment bank, was going to go back. But my senior year of college, I knew what I was getting into, going into investment banking. And so second semester senior year, I had a fairly light course load, and got an email from a professor at the University of Kentucky that there was a firm in Lexington that was hiring. And being in the high finance industry or wanting to get into the high finance industry, having a place, you know, that was starting in my hometown was, you know, I wanted to meet the people. And so I actually got the pleasure of meeting Scott first in, it would have been October of 2017, I first met Scott. And he actually reached out to me in February of 2019 and said that him and John had left their prior firm and had started their own venture, but they didn't leave with any junior people. And so, you know, John loves to tell this story about how Scott can't work without an intern. And so Scott needed an intern.
Okay.
And so, you know, went in, met with the team, started. I had really enjoyed my time in Charlotte, was planning on going back, but, you know, really enjoyed the time I spent with John and Scott. And I'm from Kentucky, right? I mean, yeah. I was born and raised in Lexington, was getting ready to go into high finance, whether it was Charlotte, New York, wherever I was going to end up, it wasn't going to be home. And so being with John and Scott and getting to stay local while working with people that have, you know, a very similar background to myself was a great opportunity. And so I joined the team full time in June of 2018 and have been here almost 5 years now. And, you know, John had mentioned earlier when we were talking before the show, John actually did first start paying me with checks out of his personal account.
Oh, wow.
You know, okay. Being the entrepreneurial student I was, I actually offered to work for free.
There you go.
You know, it's hard to get into the private equity industry. And so, you know, getting the opportunity to work with the team was going to be great. And it just goes to show kind of the type of people that John and Scott are, that they actually would not let me work for free.
That's awesome. I mean, okay, well, before we go any further, what was that like? I mean, like, were you ever like, oh my God, like, how am I going to make ends meet or anything like that? Or like...
No, Scott does that enough for both of us.
Okay.
But it's funny, though, as Tyler mentioned, Scott can't work without having someone to, like, tell what to do.
Right.
And so even though we left our other firm and we had no investments, right. We had no investors, we had literally nothing to do, the first thing that Scott wanted to do was hire someone to delegate his nothing to do to. And so we brought Tyler on board to do nothing.
Oh, that's good. That's
yeah,
good.
It was awesome.
Was he good at doing nothing, though?
He was very good at doing nothing.
Well, that's good. That's good.
And our office was so small that Tyler was set up in the conference room. And anytime we had an investor visit, he had to leave the conference room.
Okay.
And but he did work for free most of the time. And I remember we had agreed to pay him, but I was actually cutting the checks. And so I hadn't cut him a check. And he was getting ready to go on spring break. And he's like, John, I haven't been paid yet, and I'm going on spring break. And I was like, okay, how much money do I owe you? And so he told me, so I wrote him a check. And Tyler's been a real inspirational story for everybody here. You know, one of the reasons that we started the firm here in Lexington is because we wanted to showcase talent just like Tyler. I mean, Tyler's a great example of, you know, what I call brain drain. You know, we have a lot of really smart and capable people that come through the university system. At the University of Kentucky, as well as the other educational institutions here in the state. And if they want to go to high finance or if they want to go into certain industries, they have to leave the state. And so we lose a lot of our super smart and capable people inside of the state that go to these other markets, and they go and work in those other markets. And one of the reasons when that we founded the firm and we wanted to headquarter here is because we think Kentucky has a lot to offer. A lot of people don't understand, Kentucky and what it is all about. And there's a great work ethic here. It's a great place to raise a family. It's a nice environment to work in. But I think Tyler's a really good example of what we're trying to do. And we've done more and more now that we've hired more people, is bringing opportunities to the local area where we're able to give people like Tyler an opportunity to fulfill his dream of working in private equity or in the high finance industry, doing mergers and acquisitions, managing billions of dollars of capital right here in Lexington, Kentucky, which wasn't available before we founded the firm here.
Absolutely. And I mean, the fact that not only have you all been able to build this firm, and you do it, obviously, you know, you built it from the ground up. You both have backgrounds, whether that's in education or in a combination of education and real world experience. And then you're able to turn around and then bring something that isn't in Kentucky, and you're really kind of paving a path, not only in the middle market, but you're also paving a path for Kentucky to be like, hey, stop making all of this great talent and shipping it out of the state. Like, keep people around. Let's start bringing industry back. And that's really cool, man. Yeah. That's something to really be proud of.
Yeah, I am.
So on that note, let's dive into today's topic, which is talking about electrification and autonomous vehicles, and also connected cars. But we're going to dive in with electrification. How would you all define electrification?
You know, you've seen over time a lot of, products, especially in the industrial market, trend from being powered by gasoline or fossil fuels to electric power. And obviously, as technologies developed over time, you know, you started, at least my first memory, and it's not that long ago, was an electric weed eater. Right? That was the first thing in the industrial market that I saw go fully electric. And the reality is the battery that you need for a weed eater is a lot different than the battery you need to power a car. Right. And so as that technology is as that technology is developed over time, I think you've seen, more and more industrial applications, and as battery technologies advance, be able to be powered by electric, which obviously, there's a lot of benefits related to fossil fuels and emissions, et cetera, that the further that technology goes, the more you can prevent things like global warming and other, unintended consequences of the fossil fuels.
So you've answered why it's important. Obviously we're trying to get away from dirty fossil fuels and trying to go for clean, renewable energy, not only to deal with like climate crisis, but also just because it's good business, right? I mean, you can't do the same thing for, year after year after year and expect for any sort of innovations to take place.
Well, take the whole climate change off the table, because there's, people that are on both sides of the equation, and, the climate's always changing, I guess. If you go back, we had ice age and now it's warm, and so the climate has changed. There's people that say that humans haven't really impacted climate change, and no matter what side of the equation you're on, just take that off the table. When you think about using fossil fuels as an energy source, we're literally destroying the planet to do it.
Right.
Right. Whether it's digging coal out of a mountain or whether it's pumping oil out from, underneath our feet, we're literally taking resources of the planet and we're consuming those resources.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so at some point in time, those resources are not, infinite. And so at some point in time, those resources are going to go away. And they're not going to be able to be used by, further generations. And so you have to, at some point, some part of our economy has to start thinking about the next generations.
Absolutely.
And how we're going to survive as a civilization. And we can't just continue to do things the way that we've always done them. And so I think electrification, because you can argue that electrification, is it really clean energy? Because how's the electricity produced that you put into your car, right? They're still burning fossil fuels to do it. Like the majority of the electricity is generated by fossil fuels. So, but take all that argument out of the table and just say, we're not even going to talk about that. We're going to dismiss that as an issue. We still have to do something because there's a finite amount of resources. And, you know, if you don't think we're destroying the planet, go to Eastern Kentucky and look at, you know, the, and again, take out the carbon emissions, take that out of the equation, look at the process to mine coal, look at the health consequences on the workers, look at the local communities, look at, you know, what's happening to the beautiful mountains and the, to the terrain, absolutely. You know, all of these impacts. And so at some point as a species, you know, we have to look to try to repair the damage that's already been done, you know, on the planet. And so again, this is a step in the right direction, you know, when you think about like electrification and, you know, some of these things that go on in the mobility industry, which are really exciting, but it's not all about just fossil fuels and greenhouse gases.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's definitely, like you're saying, it is a finite resource. The bigger the populations grow, the more demand, the more strain that it puts on consumption of oil, natural gas, and so on and so forth, especially coal as well. Looking at that, though, I mean, just moving forward, talking about, you know, electrification and kind of diving into getting people to switch over to that, how do you think that companies go about inciting change and pulling people in and pulling industry in to say, we need to start backing this. You can't keep doing the same thing. Like you brought up, we only have so much oil. We only have so much natural gas. There's only so much coal. You destroy the environment in the process of retrieving this stuff. How do we go forward? How do we move?
Well, the way change has to happen is it's individual people drive change, not the government. So everybody waits for the government to give us answers. Like, well, what's the EPA going to do about this? What's, right. You know, what, you know, these, the Paris Accords or like these different climate policies in the modern era since 1980, you know, when I would say that like there's been a woke movement on the environment and we started to have like increased regulations, fuel consumption has continued to rise by 3.5% per year. You know, so it's not regulations, not impacting, it's not having an impact on our consumption. And so we're still consuming, we're still producing. And by and large, fossil fuels, 80% or more of the energy that we consume on the planet is generated by fossil fuels. So, you know, the way to make real change in anything is not to wait for the government. I mean, look at our government. Look, they can't even, you know, they can't even decide like, you know, simple things. They don't even know what's important. You know, it's ridiculous. And so, you know, you've got a bunch of people in politics that are really good at doing and achieving nothing. And so we can't rely on them to solve our problems. And so we have to solve our problems. And so that's individual companies, individual organizations, individual people. You know, we all have to make decisions to do something different. And it's just like anything in life. If you want something to change, you have to do something different. You can't continue to do what you've always done. You can't do what your parents have done. And change is uncomfortable for people.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, so how do we do it is we just start doing it. Like we actually have to change. And that's one of the things that, you know, I'm really passionate about is trying to make change happen. And that means you just have to do it. So whether it's, you know, at your individual company, and deciding, you know, that we're going to, you know, put in, you know, low energy, you know, light bulbs and try to use less power. And we're going to start measuring it. And we're going to start doing, you know, these different, objectives, you know, thinking about, you know, what the impact has, long-term on the environment or on the community. You know, it takes that individual contribution.
I absolutely agree. You know, Tyler, you were mentioning like one of the first electrifications that you can remember product wise was more focused around like weed eaters and like kind of in the lawn care world. What other examples and products that are like surfaces do you think incorporate electrification on like a good scale? What other areas do you think need to be more aggressive about it? And is there anybody that's leading the way for it?
Well, yeah, I think just to add kind of to what John was saying, I think one of the big things that's happened is you did see, you know, companies start to have success with electrification, right? I mean, companies like Tesla started making electric vehicles and have been over time fairly successful at doing that. and it's driven kind of change and competition in that type of environment where, you know, one of the leading factors to get people to adopt, let's say, electrification in a vehicle, for example, is to make it cost effective, right? And so what has to happen for it to become cost effective? Obviously, the government can subsidize it, which they did to start. But what's driving change today is that all the automakers are competing to see who can make the best electric vehicle, who can make the most cost effective, what's the battery range going to be, what's, you know, how far can you get on one charge? And so I think to John's point, you know, whether it's a single company, like starting to see that change and starting to see companies be successful drives competition, and the competition is making the product better. Like over time, batteries for electric vehicles are becoming more and more cost effective. Well, one of the key tipping points to get people to adopt it is for the cost of an electric vehicle to become less than the cost of an ICE engine. And so with the companies competing and driving that cost down and down, the gap between an electric vehicle and an ICE engine is going to converge. And eventually, you know, the consumer will start to adopt the cheaper option, which over time will likely become an electric vehicle.
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the day, I think something that drives change more than anything is your wallet. Like whatever's going to, you're going to sit down, you're going to say, well, yeah, electrification is great and I love that idea, but I can't afford a car. You know, you could throw out a fact to somebody and say, you know, a gallon of gas is 8 pounds, for example. When you burn that, it produces about 20 pounds of CO2. And somebody's going to say, well, that's just horrible. Is it more expensive? And they're going to say, well, yeah. They're going to say, well, I'll take the other one. Like, I mean, yeah, people have a conscience about it. You know, people want change to be there. People want their leaders, their government, to take those steps, to be proactive instead of reactive. But so many people, like you said, just get caught up in just the BS of everything. And that really kind of hampers change. On that note of hampering change, how do you all think that COVID has affected electrification and moving that forward?
Yeah, I think it's actually helped, because I think what you saw happen during COVID was a lot of the governments, in order, you know, they're worried about the economy slowing down and grinding to a halt, unemployment going up. And what happened is they tried to subsidize the economy, whether it's giving, you know, the classic example is people got stimulus checks, right?
Right.
Well, the government also, you know, as a part of that, tried to encourage that money or those dollars that went in the economy to be spent in a constructive fashion. And so actually there are many countries, you know, especially in the European Union, that as a part of their, you know, subsidy plan that they put in place during COVID, they actually increased the subsidy to purchase an electric vehicle, because they were giving people money and they're trying to direct it in where they wanted it to go. And so in a lot of cases, like the subsidies related to electric vehicles throughout COVID, they actually increased because the people were trying to drive that money going into that section of the economy.
That's fantastic. Well, that's good. I mean, I think, you know, with any sort of challenges like that, you know, you can use that as an opportunity for growth. It's what you talked about on the first episode. You were talking about how a lot of people were hunkering down and laying people off because of COVID. And you all said no. You said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to focus on internal and fixing that and trying to put us ahead on the curve for the next path.
And whenever there's change that goes on, there's opportunity. And again, it's uncomfortable for people.
Like, absolutely.
People are uncomfortable with change. And who's the most uncomfortable, right? The people that are benefiting from the current environment, right? So the traditional OEMs,
right?
You know, when you think about automotive, you know, they've had the technology to do what they've been, you know, what they're doing now for years. There just wasn't the catalyst for the change, right? And as Tyler mentioned, you know, Tesla put some pressure, you know, on them, even though Tesla has not been really successful, you know, producing cars. They put pressure on the industry because of the appearance of technology. And now you're seeing real technology, like, actually come to market in the OEMs that actually have, you know, generational capital that they have been researching and developing these products for, you know, many years. But the tide has shifted now. And so now, you know, electric cars are coming. Like, if you don't like electric cars and you're like, I'm not going to own, you're going to own an electric car. Like, everybody that's alive today, they're going to own an electric car, and you don't have any choice about it, because that's all that's going to be offered. You know, that wave has already happened. It's already, all the money has been spent to develop those products.
Right.
And once the money has been spent to develop those products, that's coming.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that, but it takes that, it takes that, it takes some kind of a push that has to like push the global, the regional, the local economies in order for something like, you know, that to happen. And from electrification in the automotive industry, the big push, if you remember, you know, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years ago when oil prices were so cheap that, I mean, literally there were tankers of oil on the ocean that nobody would buy because the oil was so cheap that, you know, it was just so cheaply available. And so nobody would buy it. And so that was like, that was the, that's when the big mistake was made by the oil producing countries, is because to combat that problem, you know, they ratcheted down production drastically and tried to artificially, you know, they could, because they artificially control the pricing, right? They determine how much they're going to produce,
right?
And they artificially, you know, change the pricing. Well, they gripped it too tight, and when they gripped it tight, it caused this like mass shock to the system, because we started to see in America, we started to see $5 gas prices, right? People was taking $150 to fill up your tank,
absolutely,
and like, you know, people weren't ready for that. And so everybody's driving around these big SUVs that get, you know, even 12, 15 miles to the gallon, you know, on their best days, and, you know, started hitting people in their pocketbook. Absolutely. And so, and so then that started the journey. And then as it started to develop and they could see it coming, they started to try to correct it and get gas cheap again, but it was too late. Because now all the capital had been spent on developing all of the products and all the infrastructure and all of these different things are going on. And I think it's fascinating because the automotive industry was typically a part of the transportation industry. It was just a subsector of transportation. But now automotive industry has turned into its own industry. It's turned into mobility.
Right.
So, you know, now there's a new industry that's being created. It's called mobility. And electrification is a part of that, and it's a component of that. But you also have, you know, autonomous vehicles, you have connected vehicles, you know, you talk smart cities, you know, where things are going, and where, you know, just think of a time when like your car will communicate with all of the infrastructure, and so you'll never get a red light, you know, or you'll get the minimum amount of red lights, like your traffic won't be disrupted. Right. Now our red lights are timed, so like you go and you have to wait, there's no cars there, you have to wait for, you know, and there's, you know, once, but we have pressure switches at least.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it can adjust it. Some countries don't even have that.
Yeah.
But you have to wait even if there's no cars coming. Well, that'll go away as we have like, you know, more connected vehicles, you know, on the road. Autonomous vehicles, you know, is going to be a little farther off. Connected cars are going to be kind of the next thing. And you're seeing that even more and more, like, you know, now with Apple and Google CarPlay in most cars.
Yeah,
you
know? Absolutely.
And so we're taking our information with us. We're generating more information, you know, and how do we utilize that information? And so there's a massive change getting ready to happen on the connected car front. That was, you know, 10 years ago was kind of happening on the electrification side. Now there's still a lot of things going on the electrification side that still have to be built out. But the die is set. It's coming. It's already happening. That change is happening. The next one that's going to challenge everybody is going to be, you know, the connected car space.
And I think, you know, to piggyback onto that, the biggest example, you know, John mentioned automotive transitioning from automotive to mobility. Well, the biggest automotive event every year has historically, it's always been the Detroit Auto Show. That's the big event in automotive every year. Well, the big event in automotive over the past couple of years, it's no longer the Detroit Auto Show. It's actually CES, the tech event in Vegas.
Oh, wow.
That's where all the OEMs are spending their capital and sending their executives, because they, you know, they don't want to be viewed anymore as legacy automakers. They're mobility businesses, they're tech businesses. And so they're spending their time and capital rather than on the legacy Detroit Auto Show. They're spending it in CES. Which happens every year out in Vegas. And I think that's one of the biggest indicators that it's shifting to being a mobility industry is those companies dedicating their time, their resources, their capital to what's historically known as a tech trade show.
So, and this is, that was beautiful. I let me tell you why, because that takes us into our third topic, which is autonomous vehicles. Man, these things are wild. These things are absolutely wild. And I, you know, both of you are very up to date on this. So I, what are they? What are autonomous vehicles? And how do you think that they're set apart mechanically and technologically from today's vehicles?
Well, you know, the autonomous vehicles they're broken down into a scale of 1 to 5 on, you know, from 1 being, you know, getting some lane departure warnings and getting some, you know, things that assist you while you're driving. And then over from as you graduate all the way to 5, which would be a fully autonomous vehicle that basically, you know, you would jump in and it would just take you where you want it to go and drop you off and, you know, go about its merry way. Right. So that's we're on the journey, but we're most vehicles today have like level 1 or level 2.
Yeah.
And even Tesla autopilot or whatever, you know, they want to call it, yeah. You know, or whatever, that's still, it's a level 2 system. It's, you know, it still requires the driver to be attentive, you know, while they're driving, even though some drivers are not attentive, as many YouTube videos will show you.
Yeah.
And, you know, people sleeping behind the wheel, but that's irresponsibility on the part of the consumer of not understanding the technology, you know, just because the car has the capability to like drive itself like down the road, you know, and avoid some, you know, minimum obstacles doesn't make it, you know, where you can sleep behind the wheel.
Yeah.
You know, that technology's been available on planes and boats for years. And, right. You know, you can't, you know, pilots don't go to sleep when they're on autopilot, yeah. Right? You know,
not good pilots, at least.
something could happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, you have to be able to take over, you know, in those instances.
Absolutely.
But it's still a level 2. It's an assistance system. You know, but the technology is available. Like there's nothing from a technology standpoint that keeps us from having fully autonomous vehicles like tomorrow. There's nothing that keeps us from doing that except the infrastructure around us. Because, you know, if you think about it, you're driving a vehicle and it's fully autonomous. It's aware of its surroundings. It can make decisions. It can do things. But then you have some idiot that's driving the car next to you that is not a computer,
right,
and is not making logical decisions, right, and starts doing his own thing, it can cause like a big problem. So in order for those systems to operate, it has to be like a very controlled environment. And so, you know, it's really fascinating. I think there's lots of opportunities that we're already seeing cool applications. We see these little there's these little cars that deliver groceries
from
grocery stores autonomously to your house.
Yeah.
We have these items that would deliver, you know, think pizzas on college campuses and, you know, and in manufacturing, we've had those for years. We've had autonomous vehicles in the plants. And so they would, you know, carry parts from one area to the other. So the technology's been around, you know, for decades. For what we're using those products for today, they're just interacting with more people. But, you know, to me, this, you know, autonomous vehicles, there's a lot of opportunity in this space. And 5 years ago, you know, when you look at the space, it was kind of like there was equal opportunity between connected vehicles, autonomous vehicles, and electric vehicles. Electric vehicles now have ramped up and have taken most of the capital in the market. Autonomous vehicles still in that level 1, level 2, level 3 area, a couple of cars pushing in. Cadillac pushes in a little bit. Audi has some technology that pushes into level 3 in some instances. But by and large, there's still not a lot of capital being spent. And there's some barriers to that. One is the infrastructure. So, you got to get all of the state, local, federal governments, you got to get them on board with like what kind of infrastructure technology we're going to use. So, for example, how are these devices going to communicate with each other? Are they going to – what kind of technology are they going to use? Are they going to use Wi-Fi? Are they going to use cellular signals? What 5G? Like that's not been standardized. You know, so there's not a standard been set and applied for that today. And, you know, one of the things I do is a lot of people don't know it, but I sit on this committee for the National Academy of Science for Traffic Control Devices.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And sounds like a nice thing to do in your spare time.
Yeah. But we have so much of it.
Yeah. And so one of the things the reason I joined that, you know, 4 or 5 years ago is because that's where I see that you're going to start seeing the technology come for autonomous and connected vehicles is you're going to see it through you know, everything's going to have to go through like that committee. So like, you know, as when you think about traffic control devices, you know, that's where you're going to start to see like this technology start to proliferate. And so, you know, it gives me good insight into like what's going on in those spaces.
It blows my mind because, I mean, the concept of it is super cool because, I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, if you're driving a few hours and you're like, God, I'm getting tired because it happens to everybody, right? Who wouldn't love just autopilot? Lean back and take a nap. That being said, you know, what are the pros and cons of this? I mean, like we are, like you mentioned, we're on level two, which is partial driving automation. To get to that point, that's level five. It's full driving automation at that point. What do you think current pros and cons are that we face?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest pros is from a safety standpoint, right? You remove human error from the equation. But the con on the other side, right, is you introduce technological error that might not have existed previously. And I think if you think about it from a macro perspective, just as human beings, we like to be in control.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, there's 40,000 people every year that die in car crashes in the United States. And nobody talks about those. But the first time a Tesla crashes, everyone wants to know, was it on autopilot, right? Yeah. Was it on autopilot? Was it the technology's fault? And that's a huge deal. And that's one of the biggest kind of, not necessarily a con, but prohibiting factors to making it more readily available, more accessible, more people doing it, is people like to be in control. And as a general rule, a lot of times don't trust technology. And so I think that's one of the big obstacles that people are going to have to overcome is getting used to that technology. And just to John's point, change is uncomfortable and people don't like it.
Absolutely. And like you just mentioned, you know, people, you know, you could have 100 successful test runs and one bad one. People don't care about the 100. They care about the one. So how do you convince and get a nation of people and a mindset of, you know, you got to trust this car, trust this company, because you're not just trusting the vehicle itself. You're trusting the technology. You're trusting the linemen who put it in or the machines that put it in to make sure that everything was calibrated, that all of the components are good, that the company itself cares about, you know, safety over profit. How do you get somebody who's skeptical about it, who reads about the car, the accidents that have happened, to say, you know what, I'm going to trust it. You know, how do you do that?
Well, I mean, the accidents that have happened are people that are trying to use level two technology at the level five, right? And so it's user error.
Gotcha.
You know, so it's not the application error. Now, arguably, they shouldn't call it autopilot, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not autopilot, right? That's not what it is. It's advanced cruise control, right? That's what it is. That's something that we're used to,
right?
And so my car, I have a Porsche Taycan, and it has that feature on it, very, very similar. And it's good. Like it'll change lanes. It'll slow down. It'll speed up. It will, it'll do a lot. And it keeps you right in the center of the lane. My comfort with it is if like, I don't like to text and drive. Okay.
Right.
That's just something I don't do.
Yeah.
But if I have my Porsche on, you know, advanced cruise control, let's call it. And my phone goes off. I feel comfortable enough to pick up my phone and look at it and put my phone back down, but that's about it.
Okay.
You know, I don't feel comfortable enough to like lay down and go to sleep. You know, there's these cheat videos on YouTube that show you how you can put an ankle weight on the steering wheel and
isn't that mind blowing?
You can do all this stuff. Okay. You know, but that should tell you something, right? Okay.
Yeah.
If you're having to put an ankle weight on the steering wheel.
Where like, are you at in your life?
The chances that you're going to like have an accident and like kill your family,
yeah.
you know, just because you want an extra, some sleep,
yeah.
You know, you're using the technology the way it's not intended. And how many times throughout history have there been accidents where people have misapplied technology? It happens all the time.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, people are excited. There's a group of people that are really excited about technology.
Right.
And they want to like, they get excited about its capability, but again, they're using it, you know, beyond what it's actually capable of doing.
Right.
And so that's causing some of this fear, this like negative fear, just like if you remember all the Teslas, you know, catching on fire because of their batteries. Like everybody was worried about the battery.
Oh yeah.
You know, and all the fires, but you don't hear about that much anymore.
No.
Right. Because there's more of these autopilot accidents than there are, you know, Tesla battery fires.
Right.
And so, you know, so I think, you know, over time it's, you know, as more and more of these vehicles are getting adopted with the technology, and then it's generational. So you have young people now that are getting in cars that have this level two technology in it, and they don't know any different.
Right.
You know, there's even a generation of people today that they get in cars and they don't know how to use their mirrors because their cars have always had video cameras in them.
Oh, yeah.
And like if you turn off their video cameras, they don't even know how to parallel park or do anything because, you know, the camera. And we get dependent on it. Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
I have some older cars. And I'll jump in them and put them in reverse, and I'm looking at the radio like, where's the camera?
Anytime
there's no camera, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's just a matter of time, you know, to get people like accustomed to it. I think generational, there's going to be a current, you know, there's a older generation that is never going to trust it.
It's my dad. Right? Without a doubt, that's my dad.
Yeah. And then the younger generation that is, is trusting in the technology because they've always had the technology. So it's going to transition, you know, kind of through that time horizon. But there's still a big gap. And again, that's on the infrastructure side, on us being able to have these devices communicate with one another. Like the big problem right now with autonomous vehicles, and it goes into connected cars. They're kind of interwoven, and that's why I think connected car will come first. And we're already seeing that more and more. But there's already connected cars. But I'm talking about, you know, we have where your vehicle will talk to your mobile device, right?
Yeah,
and absolutely. We have your mobile devices connected to the internet.
Yep.
And so then that makes your vehicle can get like up to date weather and all these different types of features and different information. You got all these collision avoidance. We have all these different things in the car. But, you know, there's the V to X technology. So that's a vehicle to everything. And so the vehicle to talk to everything. One of the big problems in the whole scheme of executing this is how do you account for people, items that don't have technology capability? So think of a baby in a baby carriage.
Right.
Right. So like right now, a mom pushing a stroller, you might know the mom's there because she's got a phone.
Yeah.
Right. And you can use near, you know, RFID and you can, you know, tell that there's, you know, someone there with a phone, but you can't tell there's a baby in a baby carriage. Right. Yeah. So there's no way to detect that. Dogs, animals, people on bicycles, joggers, runners, you know, people that, you know, may be, you know, using an iPod and not having their phone with them or maybe have their phone, you know, in sleep mode, you know, because they're trying to concentrate on their run or whatever. And so there's a lot of unconnected people, devices, items that have to be accounted for. And so figuring out how to account for those devices, and there's technology being developed for that.
Yeah.
But that's one of the big barriers, is just the technology barrier of figuring all of those problems out. But again, that's huge opportunity. And there's lots of businesses that are trying to solve those problems and are finding themselves in like really interesting situations, really small companies that, you know, weren't trying to position themselves as autonomous car companies or connected car companies, are finding themselves in the space, you know, today because they had a specific technology to address one or, you know, many of the various problems going on.
I just, the whole concept, it's super cool, man. Like if there's I saw an ad and it was, I think it was for GM, but it was back in the 1950s and this guy is driving down the road and it was similar to, what'd you call the conference? The CES? Mm-hmm. It was similar to that. And like the whole idea was like, this is the car of the future. And then you'll be able to drive your old family around. And like, he turns around, he's like, you mind if I have a cigar in this enclosed dome? It's hilarious, but it's so cool to see, like, it's been on the radar, like you said, for a long time. Like it's not anything new. It's just now we're trying to figure out a way to bring it to the mainstream, to bring it to the average consumer. So I do have, because you mentioned a good point, you keep bringing up infrastructure and American infrastructure. That's a very important point because there is a lot of outdated infrastructure. And to get Americans to say, hey, I'll, again, go to my wallet and, you know, pay more taxes and do X, Y, and Z to help replace that is kind of a hard sell. So what do you think the autonomy market for the vehicles can do well at this point? What do you think that they're doing well? What do you think that they're doing bad?
Clayton, you're so naive. you think our taxes actually pay for the infrastructure?
I'm just humoring people.
Yes. So like tax revenue doesn't even like touch our spending, you know, as a country.
Right.
So it's ridiculous, right? So like, don't get me started on that. We should have a discussion about that one day.
Okay.
But it's not reaching into our pockets. You know, it's actually just focus. It's focus and attention. You know, our government does what it does. They create money. They create markets. You know, we're $30 trillion in debt, and there's no plan by any of the governments of this world to have like a balanced budget. They don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Like that. So they can, as long as countries from one another will continue to buy each other's debt, they're going to continue to trade debt with one another, and they're just, you know, manufacturing. They can spend a lot more than what comes in from tax revenue.
What could possibly go wrong with that?
Yeah. Hey, you know, but it's their focus. It's the focus, right. You know, and, but again, it gets back to, you can't wait for governments to solve the problem.
Right.
And the government's not going to solve the infrastructure problem. They're not going to solve the problem. They can put some money after it.
Right.
And, you know, they can put some money towards those problems, but the government's not going to fix the problem. You know why the government's not going to fix the problem? Because there's some legislature that a legislative person in some legislative body that is, you know, from a specific state, and he's more concerned about what his state gets than what the rest of the country gets. And so he's like busy funneling money and resources to his state than he is like the actual problems, and it's a free for all in up there. And so it's where, you know, consumers through their choices that they make and the products that they select and the companies that they do business with and those companies driving the solutions, that's how we actually get things done. It's not the government. You know, the government is like the last, they're not even a fast follower anymore. Like, they're not leading right now. You would think that with connected car and all this, they would be like saying, oh, well, we need to have this, like, you know, this like standard protocol. Yeah. You know, we need to develop all of these, you know, different things that someone's like organizing that. You would think that there's like someone doing that. No, our government's not doing that. There's no one in our government doing that. There's no one in our government organizing that. You know, they're too busy, you know, dealing with, you know, the problems to identify the solutions. And so it's just fighting fires is like all they do. I mean, you know, the infrastructure for our air traffic control system is like out of date. We know it's out of date. There's a new system was developed and never implemented because the concern of like the impact that it would have, hundreds of billions of dollars were spent to develop it. It wasn't rolled out and implemented. And we're still using this antiquated, you know, system that was developed in the 1970s to, you know, to control all these really advanced airplanes that are flying in the skies. You know, so right. It's those weak links, you know, in the industries that are the problems and are the barriers to us advancing society. And so that's why it's important for business owners, for individual people, you know, to make those changes happen. And the good news is that there's, you know, cause it sounds kind of morbid when you talk about how ineffective our government is at anything. But the good news is that change is happening because there's like new generations, that have different focuses. And so you're having, you know, like my parents' generation and, your grandparents' generation, they were a generation that believed in the government because the government then did try to solve problems and fix things and do things. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from my generation to your generation, like that, the government has just become completely ineffective at doing anything. And now there's a generation that's used to the government being completely ineffective of doing anything. And now they know that they have to drive the change themselves.
Yeah.
And so now that generation is starting to drive the change, and you're seeing it because like young people today, they have a different mindset when it comes to like purchasing items as a consumer. You know, so for example, they'll go into a clothing store and they'll start looking and saying, was this made with sustainable fabric? Was the supply chain responsible to manage, you know, to bring this product to the market? You know, because they care about, like, they've been, you know, raised in an environment where they see the impact on the planet and others around them, and people see that as negative, but it's actually positive because those are the people that are actually going to make change happen in the world as those generational people get into positions of power. You're going to start to see more change happen because they're driving it with the decisions that they make with their individual pocketbook. And that's what it takes. It takes that individual change, you know, to drive after it. There's, you know, like I said, my parents' generation, you know, you buy, you know, Ford, GM, and Chrysler. Well, Chrysler doesn't exist anymore, right?
Right.
And it's Stellantis. Like, who wants to buy a car called Stellantis? Like, that's the stupidest name that I've ever heard for a car company. But, you know, and then, you know, that same generation, if you bought a German car, oh, you know, we fought them in the war, you know, and the Japanese car, oh, we fought them in the war, you know, right? And so, you know, and the Koreans, oh, we fought them in the war.
Yeah. A lot of wars.
Yeah, a lot of wars. And it seems like everybody fighting a war comes out with a car, you know, and so, you know, is responsible for a car. But anyway, so like, but it's a different generational thinking. And today, you know, the young people that are coming, you know, into the, into being consumers, you know, they see a lot of choices, right? Do they align to any one brand? No, they don't. Right. And that's who does that, you know, put in jeopardy? It puts these like large businesses in jeopardy. And that's to Tyler's point. It's why they're trying to reinvent themselves. And then, you know, that's why, you know, all the car companies are trying to become mobility companies because they've seen what's happened with internet companies. So look at all the tech companies that like Google, Apple, you know, Facebook, you know, Amazon. Where do they make most of their money? On the information. Think about how much information is generated by the car, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, why do they want to get into this? Because they want to get into the information business because it's a really big business. And so, you know, that's their motivation to get into this business. It's not about, you know, it's not about connected cars for them. It's not about autonomous vehicles for them. It's about making money, you know, and if you're a stockholder of that company, you hope it's about making money. And so, but they're trying to tap into that. And so that brings up a whole nother issue. So if you think your privacy is being invaded now with your phone collecting all your information, wait till your car is collecting. Your car collects all this information today.
Yep.
And that information is sold. You know who the number one purchaser of our information is? Did you know?
No.
The federal government. So the NSA, CIA, you know, all of the different government agencies, they're the number one buyer of all of our information, whether it's from social media or whether it's from the car companies. You know, they buy the data because your car actually records like when you turn your windshield wipers on and off in the car, like when it's raining, when it's not raining. Now, people will tell you, maybe they just want it because they want the wet. Well, the rain's already happened, so they don't need it for the weather data.
Yeah.
Like, well, what are they doing it for? Right. And so, you know, but it's the more information they have, it's all about being more predictive on like what we're going to do and what our behaviors are and what's going to happen. And just like, you know, if you've seen the Social Dilemma, if you've seen that series on Netflix, that documentary, you know, the internet companies, they don't monitor your data to try to figure out what you're going to do. They monitor your data because they actually already know what you're going to do. They monitor your data so much. They know, like Amazon knows that, you know, Clark gets on or Clayton gets on at 2 o'clock in the morning and puts these five things in his basket, but never checks out every Tuesday.
It's a problem. I know I'm working on it, but
they know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
They know those things.
Yeah.
And so they know when you're going to purchase, when you're not going to purchase. They know all of that ahead of time. Think about that. It's like really scary to think about that. Now open up your vehicle to that.
Yeah.
And now all of that information, you know, and so it's even more information on you that's going to be available. And so what's the big actual product here? It's information.
Man, where do you go from there? Well, I'll tell you where we go. We're almost out of time, but I do want to touch on a couple of things.
Don't miss the next episode when we talk, did we really go to the moon or not?
The truth with John Stewart.
No. I do want to talk on a couple of things because you've talked about connected cars. You've defined what a connected car is, how it works, you know, what the functions can be there, how some people out there think that it's two different things. Like connected cars are separate from autonomous vehicles. So my question to both of you is, are they different?
Well, I think there are elements of them that are the same. I think one of the core differences is, and one of the reasons John says, you know, connected cars are going to be first, that technology is going to be first. The connected cars is all about collecting the information. Whereas the autonomous vehicle, not only is it collecting the information, but then it's making decisions based on the information that it collects. And so I think you have to start with the connected car, right? You have to get the information before you can then process it and make decisions based off of it. So I think they're not one and the same. They're correlated, but there's a key difference in terms of what happens when you get the information. Are you selling it to the government, or are you using it to turn your turn signal on, change lanes, brake, accelerate, et cetera?
So I'm also assuming that ties into the IoT, which for anybody who doesn't know, that's the Internet of Things, referring to basically just anything around the vehicle. Is that right? As far as like,
well, that it's not just around the vehicle. The IoT would be the Internet of Everything, right? So anything that's connected to the internet.
Gotcha. Okay. So how will that work with connected car technology to help improve communication and safety between the vehicles?
Well, I mean, in various ways. I mean, one, just collecting the data, knowing how individual people drive. You know, would you like to know if like the person next to you has had like 5 accidents and is like a really dangerous driver?
Right? Going to get away from them.
So there's that type of capability. Absolutely. You know, to give you those types of warnings. You get warnings because there's a car next to you. If you know that person's been driving 35 miles an hour over the speed limit and has been weaving in and out of the lines, right? You know, you could get a drunk driver warning, right?
Oh, wow.
You know, there's a lot of ways that you can use like the information in order to provide more information to other drivers to help them on the way to, level 5 kind of autonomous driving. There's, you know, using all of the information to develop traffic patterns and, you know, have better traffic data, better traffic information, knowing when people are traveling from point A to B and like how fast, what route they travel. And so planning roads for the future and planning, you know, the timing of the stoplights and, you know, all those different things. So you can use the data, you know, for all of those purposes. And so, you know, getting the data and the information, it's a good thing. Like, I'm the kind of person, I know that all the data is being collected on me from the internet and I opt in for all of it because I like it. Like, you know, like I like the fact that they market directly to me about products that I want to buy. That's completely fine. And I'm not doing anything wrong with the device or the information. So I'm not worried about anybody knowing about what I'm doing.
Like, yeah.
You know, absolutely. So there's the dark, shady side of things, but then there's the, you know, if you just look on the surface, it's going to improve the experience for everyone. It's going to make it easier for us to travel. Having more information about the route, you know, just getting like traffic updates now is how helpful that is, you know, Waze, or whether you use Apple or Google Maps, and it gives you that kind of information, providing that information. Now, the thing that people aren't going to like is now that the cars are connected and you know all this information, what stops the Kentucky State Police Department from developing an app that automatically gives you a ticket when you drive over the speed limit?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Right. There's those types of things, you know, that are coming down the pipe probably as well, you know, and people say, well, that's invading my privacy. Well, not if you're putting the information publicly out there, it's not. And yeah, there's pluses and minuses, and you know, we got to be aware of those. But it's something that's coming. Like it is going to come. It's already in your car today.
Yeah.
Like nobody buys a car today that is not connected. And you know, even if you don't turn on the cellular, you know, if your car has Wi-Fi and you don't buy the Wi-Fi card, even if you don't connect your phone to it, your car is connected and collecting your data, and it is sending the information back. You know, my car, I mentioned I got a Porsche Taycan, and every day it communicates with Porsche headquarters and gets updates to the software, updates itself, and does all of it. And I have no control over whether it does it or not. Like, it just does it. And so it's my car.
Yeah.
Right? But I actually don't own the software. I don't own the technology.
Right.
And so and that's another way that the industry is going in automotive or mobility is the subscription service. So Tesla already does this with their cars. Like, most of their cars are already equipped with, like, all the options. But then you can turn an option on or off and pay a subscription fee to use it at select times, right? So now that could be a good thing,
right,
in the standpoint that, like, the auto, like level 5 autonomous, right? Do you need it all the time?
No.
No. But maybe when you go on a long trip, you'd like to have it, right? So instead of paying $20,000 for like level 5 automation in your car that you're going to use all the time, what if you could only use it when you wanted to use it? And so you turned it on when you wanted to use it. You turned it off when you didn't want to use it, right? And so and there's actually whole business models around that where like shared cars, like the car is shared. Like why should you pay for a car and have it just sit in your garage?
That's a good
point. You know, right? And so like we're at work today, right? And all of our cars are sitting out in the parking lot. And so like we have this big investment that we made that just sits out there and waits for us to get in, and we probably drive 10 minutes home.
Yeah.
And on a daily basis, we use the car for 20 minutes, but we pay for it for 24 hours. And so there's our companies right now that are kind of exploiting that with like saying, okay, well, we can have shared cars and you just use the car when you need it. So it's like car as a subscription. And so you're going to see features of the car be subscription based. And that's another way that they can make money, you know, on the cars is, you know, having these subscription based programs. You're already seeing it. And so as the connected features become available, there'll be a basic package of them that's available in like most cars. But then if you want the extra stuff, you're going to pay for it.
It's going to be just like Hulu or Netflix or anything else. Yes.
Okay. I mean, it's a business model that's been proven time and time again, right? Whether it's, it was cable, you know, you wanted to watch HBO, it's $15 a month. Or then it was the recent one over the past 5-10 years has been video games, right? You pay $60, but then they add 3 maps and all of a sudden it's $20 to get the maps, and then
or they put out half the game and then they're like, oh yeah, the rest of it's coming out later.
It's been proven time and time again to be successful, and the mobility industry is just now picking up on that side of the
equation. If you're like my son John the second, he just waits until like there's cheat codes available because he's not really good at video games, and he just buys the cheat codes because he's like really bad when it comes to like any video game. He's really embarrassed by the fact that his dad used to beat him at boxing when he was younger. And
I think these days they call that pay to win.
Pay to win. John's really good at the pay to win stuff.
Okay, so we've got like maybe 2 minutes. So super fast, 5G, the CV2X format for connected cars, or Wi-Fi, the DSRC is the actual name for that. China has already backed the CV2X, and the EU and the US has not made a choice yet. What do both of you think? But you got to make it super fast. Which one do you think is the better platform?
5G.
5G?
Yeah.
Why do you say 5G?
You didn't specify that in your original question.
Oh, sorry. Why would you choose that, and how quickly could you tell me?
I just think that the proliferation of the infrastructure around 5G is more readily accessible, and so the technology itself is more readily accessible. So the components that you need to broaden that network is more accessible. The bandwidth is already reserved, you know, so it's already being utilized, some of the Wi-Fi options that are out there. The reason that China has gone with a Wi-Fi like solution for what they're doing, I mean, it's just the same reason that China did with the internet. So China didn't have wired internet. Like I don't think people realize that. So like China skipped. Like remember we all had like dial up and wired internet.
Oh yeah.
You know, we all had that. Well, China didn't have that. China didn't get the internet until there was Wi-Fi. Like the Chinese people did not get the internet until there was Wi-Fi. They skipped that whole. Now think about how much money they saved as like an infrastructure, right? We put wires everywhere. That's how we got internet. Like the wire, the internet in this building is brought here by a wire today, right? Like we're still not even using.
Yeah.
In China, it's all wireless. So they skipped all of that and went straight to wireless. So they have a very robust wireless technology for all their cities. For everywhere. That's how they deliver internet. And so, but when you look at how we do it, now we can't have wired in the car, right?
Because right.
We have wireless, but we're still very wired.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Because absolutely.
A lot of it's still wired. But where we're not wired, the way that we can deliver that much information with the infrastructure we have is 5G, right? Because of the phones.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I think here and in Europe has taken more steps to like already say they're going down the 5G pipeline, but the U.S. has not gone down that pipeline. It's funny because the administration today, the U.S. administration, irregardless of Democrats or Republicans, but the government as an institution, they're they've really taken a back seat, which some people may think is good. I don't think it's good. I think that there's a role for the government to set some standards and set some guidelines to make things more efficient. But they've taken a back seat, and they're kind of letting the consumers and the companies kind of figure it out, in who's going to be able to do it. And it's very inefficient. You know, it's a very inefficient process. If you think back to VHS tapes, you know, there was a thing called Betamax. Nobody knows about it today because, it disappeared. Sony made, Betamax, and you had VHS. And then if you remember that when the SD cards came out, Sony had their own, card. Does anybody remember what it's called? No, because, it was the second flop of, Sony, right? So, the technology, at some point you need some guiding direction, and that's where the governments could be helpful, but they're not. But 5G, I think, definitely will be the solution.
Tyler, real quick, what do you think and why?
No, I tend to agree that 5G is the way I think it's going to go. I mean, you think about, John said, availability brought, breadth of data, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I tend to agree.
Okay. Well, you've heard it here, ladies and gentlemen, from Sir John, for Sir John Stewart. And yes, that is how
why I call him Clark.
Yeah. Well, it's reciprocated. It's a mutual love, that we have. And Tyler May, thank you guys so much for coming out and being on here. John, thanks for coming back again. It's always a pleasure.
You're welcome, Clayton. You're welcome, Clayton. It's really nice to be here.
Middleground
made.
Also, check that series out. A big thank you to Clark Freeman and John Stewart II. You can't see them, but they are behind the cameras, and they're making all of this come to life. Thank you all very much for tuning in. Join us on the next episode when I sit down with Mike and Madeline, another wonderful, wonderful team here at Middleground Capital for ESG, as we talk about various initiatives and how ESG plays a part in your life. But until then, thank you all so much for tuning into Executive Sessions. I'm Clayton Gollett, and thanks. We'll see you next time.